Podcasts from around the world.
Hello and welcome to our monthly podcast from around the region, where we'll be exploring our clients, work and amazing people, as well as some important news. We're going to keep this to no more than 15 minutes, perfect for a quick break or a commute. Today, I'm sitting in a fantastically impressive studio in our London office with the one and only David Schneider, who you may know as the Executive Creative Director of Vatlott and one of its founders, but you also may know him as an award-winning comedian, writer, actor, producer, and director. I mean, it's a long list. It is a long list.
Yeah. It's like, what's the expression? Jack of all trades, master of none.
You said it. Still, yeah, I mean, you know, for cap fits and all that. and what I would call, though, a proper successful grown-up. So before we begin, what's your favourite podcast?
Apart from this one.
Thank you.
I'm a political animal and who's still sore about Brexit. So I like, it's called Oh God, What Now? It used to be called Remainiacs. And they look at political events, but they have a really great sense of humour. As people like Ian Dunt and Naomi Smith from Best of Britain. So, yeah, sorry, that wasn't... It's a great... You asked me a question, I answered honestly. No, what can I say?
It's all right. Yeah. It's good. I'm going to give it a go. Yeah. So you've got an incredibly impressive career on stage, in film and TV, and everything from writing The Death of Stalin, which won a National Society of Film Critics Award in the US and was nominated for 2 BAFTAs, to appearing in...
Still bitter about that.
Maybe
didn't,
next time.
Didn't win.
to appearing in Hollywood blockbusters such as 28 Days Later, Mission Impossible, A Knight's Tale and The Saint, to multiple TV and radio dramas and comedies, and most recently directing Series 2 of the HBO hit Avenue 5, which is by the same team who made Veep, which, by the way, is one of my most favourite series ever. I mean, how did you just get into all of this incredible stuff?
Yeah, I mean... You know, I like to think that I'm talented and that I've earned where I am. But it's also partially that I did go to Oxford. I was privileged. And at Oxford, I met Armando Iannucci, who's probably my best friend. So a lot of what I've done, a lot of the great stuff I've done has been with him in that amazing... I feel incredibly lucky because he's so brilliant, but also imagine working with your best friend and, you know, the sort of shorthand that you have and... the relaxed approach. So a lot of stuff I've done with him, which is great. I've been lucky that I've then, through him, met Steve Coogan and Chris Morris and all that generation that was so good in the 90s. Learned a lot from working with them, Rebecca Front. I mean, some really amazing people. So I think that's, you know, I always feel a little bit bad about it, you know, when I'm talking to young people and they say, so what's the secret of your success? Like, oh, it's hard graft and it's... it is hard graft. And I think I do say to them, you know, it's just keep going. Because, you know, I've had really fallow bits as well and I just had to keep going. So that you do create your own luck. But obviously I come from a privileged situation as well.
And in as we were going, just talking about some of the history, and you joked about still being bitter about the 2 BAFTAs nominations.
Yes. But,
and you mentioned there about the fallow areas. So just the ups and downs, the successes and the not such huge successes. How do you get through kind of the down bits, but also, you know, not go too explosive when things go incredibly well? I mean, how do you balance stuff out?
Yeah, I mean, it's easier as you get older to see the sort of perspective. It's like I sort of always feel Marks and Spencer's Prophets. You get old enough, maybe Michael, you'll understand it, where you see, oh, that's a story where they're doing really well, and then 5 years later they're in trouble, and then they're doing, and you sort of get a perspective I get a perspective on my career. But it was hard. It's hard. There was quite a few years where it was very quiet for me, and that's one of the reasons why I started that lot, in fact, because, you know, I was on social media a lot, and it's partially to justify all the time I spent on social media, but I realised that at that time I was already writing and directing TV ads, and I just could see that social was growing, that no one was applying the rigour of TV and film to social. And so I saw, if you like, an opportunity, but it was also a passion, and that's an example of... Like, I used to be an actor. When I didn't get acting work, I started writing. So it's like, I can't just sit and wait. I have to do stuff. I have to create stuff.
Well, so actually the working very hard, it is part of the ingredient. I mean,
totally.
It's obviously built into what you do, but You know, you just keep on going and trying stuff, new stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is really good advice. And one of the bits of advice that I would give to anyone starting out in any industry is just suck it all up, like enjoy everything and just keep on working and working and pushing at it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned there about that was one of the more fallow periods, was one of the motivations for starting that lot. Building a creative social agency, a fantastically successful creative social agency, seems to be quite different from being a big Hollywood star. Like, you know, is it?
Well, I wouldn't know about being a big Hollywood star. It's different from having cameos in a few Hollywood films, though, as well. But, yeah, it's... I mean, it is... It's different in a way. I think that's one of the reasons why that lot's been quite successful, is that we are... It's creative-led. That has cause problems as we get bigger because, you know, you need those structures and you need all the account support and all that other support, which is not in my background, not in David Levin, my co-founder's background, or David Beresford. You know, there's with three Dave, we were founded by three Davids, in case you didn't know.
Which is not annoying in any way.
No, and no, and then we have slowly branched out to non-Davids because, you know, it's important. But and it seems to work, but I'm still not convinced. So that so it's like I can't remember. I've made a joke now, so I have no idea what we're talking about.
The the jump from Hollywood from to that.
So what excited me was the continuity between working in TV and film and social. And now I think everyone knows that you have to be rigorous and you have to just really drill down to all the details. And the joy of doing TV or film, or especially TV ads, above the line ads, is that everything is obsessed over. And if you have an obsessive personality like me, apologies to all my employees who have to suffer that, then it's TV and film and ads are great because you can indulge that. And it's bringing that into social, where people were just going, oh, let's just put out a tweet saying we're doing this. And still now, you know, there are people who go, oh, well, let's just post on LinkedIn that we're doing this. No, no. How can you make that post interesting? How do you make this the post that you're remembered by? It could be, God forbid, you drop dead after this post. And then people go, that is the last post you've ever done. So don't just throw it away. Make sure that everything is brilliant. And I love, you know, we've just been working on a big pitch and I got so much satisfaction from some of the work that was just the details that one of our editors who just had a couple of hours to throw something together and he gave it to me and it was so beautifully done. And, you know, obviously I loved being nominated for a BAFTA and going to the BAFTAs, but sometimes you can get the same thrill from a great piece of work, a great piece of writing or whatever.
And so just talking about pitching for a moment. So obviously in agency life, it's like a daily occurrence and we all have to kind of do it. But is there big similarities or what's the learning from, I would imagine, and I don't know, but I imagine pitching a TV series or a film or a big kind of creative entertainment platform is not dissimilar from pitching. I mean, different environment and context, but you're still... selling stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There's still, you know, what is the elevator pitch? You know, what is your one-line thing? What are you trying to achieve? It's more nebulous in TV and film. You know, that's what I had to learn is that, you know, I thought KPIs was a brand of nuts, you know, when I first started at this. You know, you have to learn that you have to have your strategy. You have to lay it out. You have to know what you're working towards. And that's not the case. Sometimes it's more of an emotional thing when you're selling to TV and film. But I think... what I've learned to bring that emotion into the pitch I do for that lot. And I've learned a lot from strategists, Weber, for instance, who tell a story in their strategy that makes you go, wow, that's, you know, it's a sort of Mad Men thing. And there was a sort of, I did have a sort of cynicism to, what's all this data? What's all this strategy? We don't need it. Well, just let's have a funny idea. But I've learned a lot from working with Weber about how you tell stories. I can tell stories with the creative, but the whole thing has to tell a story and has to excite in the room. And I think that's one of the advantages that I have, having done stand-up, having done performing background, is that, you know, it's that actually putting the pitch across and selling it is... I just realised that I was going to say you have to be pithy, but I've actually talked on that answer for about 15 minutes. So I've sort of
for some
myself.
People, that's still pithy.
Yeah, okay,
believe me. Yeah. You've got such a broad and successful creative career and so many different kind of creative formats. What's your favourite format? You know, what would be your ideal way to actually... your ideal format to work in? And what do you enjoy the most? Being in front of the camera, behind the camera, directing the camera, writing it? What's your...
Yeah. Well, I realised about 5 or 6 years ago, I do not enjoy being in front of the camera. And the reason I was in front of the camera was that I wanted to be famous. It's a shallow reason. I like being, I like the recognition. But it, and it's been very liberating for me to go, no, what I really enjoy, what makes me happy is the writing and the directing. So that can be, you know, obviously I have ambitions and I love writing films and directing. So I hope to direct a film. But I love the creativity of what we do with that lot, and that you're constantly writing and you're constantly feeding back and editing. And like I said, with that video editor, or just someone writes a really good joke, just a tweet, a beautiful tweet, and you just think, I mean, that's when I first got together with DL, David Levin, and he'd done a tweet for PG Tips. Oh, what was it? I can't remember. He's done that. It was so good. you had to be there. And I just thought that's such a... I get such joy when people write something brilliant. I remember the tweet. Sorry to interrupt. It was just simply a pun. Don't char, C-H-A as in tea. Don't char wish your boyfriend was hot like tea. and I just thought, yeah, that's so good.
Is creativity and storytelling stuff, do you think it's nature or nurture? Do you think people can learn how to express themselves creatively, or is it just something that, you know, you've got a natural, you know, you're something you're born with?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think you can definitely learn it because everyone has something that they're passionate about. I often say when people are nervous about public speaking or speaking a pitch, practice with something that you really know about and you're really passionate about, and there you'll discover, oh, look, I can talk, I do connect. But I think obviously there's things that you can then learn, and I've learned, and, you know, and then I can sort of convert into teaching other people, you know, being pithy, being detailed, leading, opening with a human thing or a gag, you know, that puts people at ease. There's all sorts of things that you can learn and make sure that you're doing.
That tip you've just given of practicing on something you're passionate about before you actually practice the pitch, I think is a brilliant tip, actually. And all the years I've been doing this, I've never told anyone to do that.
Yeah.
That's such a good idea. So in terms of storytelling and creativity, what are your 5 kind of rules or tips for everyone who's listening?
Oh, well, it's funny you should ask that because I've written down 5
have
here.
You?
Yeah, I got
how convenient.
Email from someone with your name yesterday and thought, well, maybe I'm... I wrote sort of... It's so hard to boil it down to 5, but here we go. First of all, it's the Michelangelo thing of where he would look at a lump of rock and he'd already see the finished product. So whether it's a line or a video or whatever, especially with video, you just want to know what you want. You can see it in your head. I got into a bit of trouble yesterday with an idea that one of our creative directors was coming and I couldn't quite see it. As soon as he showed me a visual reference, I could see it. I could be Michelangelo. And then I thought, yeah, that's a good idea. So that's the first one. Work towards that image. The specificity is so important. It's like, I don't know if the children are in the room, please, this is not suitable the next 30 seconds. but it's the difference between saying as useless as a chocolate teapot and as useless as a marzipan dildo, which is from the thick of it. And you can feel that chocolate teapot. Yeah, it's funny, but we've heard it before. But be specific. Marzipan. It's a funny word. It's a word that you associate with it's interesting. And obviously, dildo as a whole, let's not go there. Okay, 30 seconds over, the kids can come back. there's being obsessive, I think. Just don't go, oh, that'll do. If you're tired, try and come back to it in a couple of days. But you want to boil it down into a stock cube of brilliance and have nothing that's a bit flabby. What I've learned recently, actually, is if there's a problem, you think, oh, this isn't why, right? Often the solution is earlier on. So if you're an actor, you have a problem with a line, then it's probably about 4 or 5 lines back where you actually have the problem. If there's a video and it's not quite working, it's probably about 10, 20 seconds back. And if you fix that earlier bit, certainly with film scripts, that's definitely the case, fix that earlier bit so that unlocks you. And sometimes even just looking back earlier can unlock you. So that's something I've learned quite recently. And yeah, the main one is fun. If you're not enjoying it, you're not going to do good work. Find a way to enjoy it. Come away, chill out a bit, come back if you're blocked. Or if you're blocked off and I just go and do something else and then I've quietly, 30% of my mind is thinking about the problem and 70% is doing gardening or having a shower and that unlocks me. But because when you're blocked or when you're not having fun, it's so much harder. So yeah, and then the other thing, which is a bit like, so this is a bonus one, or this is the overarching thing, what you said earlier, nothing is wasted. And that was the best advice I've ever been given when I was really down about not, you know, there was a sitcom that I thought was going to happen, it didn't happen. And someone said, it's fine, nothing is wasted. And that's true. You get better with everything you do, with every failure, with every success.
And in terms of the, for you, just what's the best kind of creative environment? Do you have to go into a shed or into, I don't know, a darkened room? Or can you just do what you do wherever you are? Does it just come, you can be on the train, like...
Yeah, it can be on the train. Because of my acting background, if it's writing, I tend to act things out on my face. So it's purely for other people to not think I'm mad. I'll do that in my shed. But yeah, I think for me it is, yeah, I just like a little bit of quiet. But also there's the collaborative thing of bouncing ideas around with great people. And a lot of my career has been, whether it's with that lot or outside that lot, has been bouncing ideas around. I like bouncing ideas around and then taking them away and quietly working on them.
So for those who don't know that lot across the region, I'm sure everyone does, but for those that don't, first of all, we're sitting in your new studio in the office in London, which is amazing.
Yes,
and there's everything from TV production in here to podcasts to, I mean, you can make anything. You can make probably a film in here. I don't know. It's like amazing setup.
Yeah.
What are the kind of the leading things that that lot does? And if anyone wants to see one of your favourite bits of work...
Yes.
So I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah. That wasn't in your email.
I know.
Get me my agent. So that lot at core, we're a social media company. That's our speciality. But because we're writers and producers and videographers, etc., we also are like a production house, so we can make things, whether it's TV, radio, social, video, whatever. And we're also cutting edge, I suppose. So social is still at our core, but, you know, we're experimenting with the metaverse. We're in a studio that is particularly suited to, like, special effects, After Effects type stuff. I mean, not special effects like Avatar, but it's like, you know, we're there with the metaverse, we're there... But we're also there with just brilliant writing. So that's what we do out of home. You know, we just brilliantly have got a lot of very gifted videographers, designers and writers, really.
And the one piece of work, if somebody wanted to look up now and go, oh, you know, I'm interested in that lot, what would be...
Yeah, that's really hard. One of the best things we've done is, but it's because I'm on the video side more, is Sexual Chocolate. It's a full-on TV show, which you can find on Amazon Prime Video, which is the thing that we did during lockdown to launch Coming to America 2. And I suppose it was a career highlight when Eddie Murphy sort of referenced it without being prompted. We didn't have to beg. and if you look at it, you don't think, oh, this is a lockdown thing. It's full of comedy. It's really well produced. Yeah, so I think that's something.
No, I agree. I think it's a brilliant piece of work. Well, thank you, DS, as we called you, just to, because there are so many Davids in that lot.
Thank you, MF.
So much. Thank you for your time. And if anyone from across the region is in London, you must make sure to pop your head into the studio on the fifth floor because it is really impressive. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we shall talk to you all again very soon.
Podcasts from around the world.